Hey Trojans, welcome back to a new semester of school and general education. I'm your host, Benjamin Gamson, and we have a lot to catch you up on. This episode contains references to sexual assault and violence. If you are in need of support, help is available. Check the description for more information. Starting last spring, USC employees have continued to unionize in record numbers. Workers cite the high cost of living in Los Angeles and stagnant wages as the primary reasons to organize. Beginning in March of 2022, campus custodians protested against their contractor, Aramark, for allegedly stalling at the bargaining table, but managed to avoid a strike. 2 months later, interns, residents, and fellows at the Keck School of Medicine unanimously voted to unionize. The negotiated contract gave employed residents salaries comparable to other medical residents in Los Angeles County. The contract also awarded a $10,000 annual housing allowance and 6 weeks of paid parental and family leave. USC graduate student workers voted to unionize in February and are still in collective negotiations with the university. 3,400 teaching assistants, research assistants, and assistant lecturers plan to rally next week in support of their cause, hoping that TAs are not forced to work unpaid hours. USC shuttle workers voted to unionize in March by a one-vote margin and are negotiating with the university. They also intend to join SEIU Local 721, the largest public sector union in Southern California. And in June, USC housing employees unionized under SEIU 721. Employees are still in the midst of negotiating their first contracts with the university. In an interview with the Daily Trojan back in March, President Carol Folt said mediators participating in labor talks is a, quote, complication, unquote, at a university. Quote, people get to make a choice. We support that, Folt said. But in the end, we want to continue to make sure that we have as few middle people between us, our students, and our faculty, and our staff as possible, unquote. In 2021, an unidentified woman filed a lawsuit with the LA County Superior Court alleging that Peter Huang, a former member of the Sigma Alpha Mu fraternity, had sexually assaulted her while she was intoxicated and unable to consent. USC hired investigators found Huang violated the sexual violence and harassment policies, resulting in his dismissal from the university. The plaintiff claims to suffer from nightmares and depression following the traumatic event, and is now seeking at least $5 million from the case. The fraternity's defense attorneys are now asking for the case to be dismissed, attributing Doe's emotional distress to pre-existing psychological disorders. Court hearings will resume later this year in September. Student housing has boomed in recent years, with several new complexes being built near USC in the past decade. Jasper, LA opened in June with prices ranging from $2,000 to $3,500 a month. Landmark Properties is developing new residential housing. They plan to open in fall of 2026 on South Figueroa Street. More complexes include Icon Plaza, The Hub, Element, Jefferson Flats, and Victory on 30th. The median rent for a two-bedroom apartment in University Park is $2,592, according to Zillow. Non-resident students are driven out by rent increases and landlords repurposing their buildings into student housing. Landlords now cater to students who are often willing to pay more for smaller spaces. They know that they will receive the highest amount of rent with students rather than families that have been paying a rent-controlled amount. In an effort to protect affordable housing near USC, Los Angeles city officials established a special overlay district near the area in 2008, with the aim of prohibiting property owners in the district from converting single-family homes to multi-bedroom student housing without a special permit. But developers have since found ways to skirt regulations by configuring small multi-bedroom units just under the threshold that would require special permitting. City Councilmember Marquise Harris-Dawson has called for expanding protections, but officials have been divided on exactly how to do so. Harris-Dawson himself pushed for the expansion of the overlay district. Meanwhile, LA City Planning released a report leading to the amendment of an entirely different plan, the South Los Angeles Community Plan Implementation Overlay, which was introduced in 2010 to help better address design and affordability issues. The amendment included a requirement that any project replacing a CPIO-protected unit have the same number of bedrooms and bathrooms and be as affordable as the unit it replaces. The LA City Council adopted it earlier this year. In light of the 2019 Varsity Blues scandal and the recent Supreme Court decision overturning affirmative action, legacy admissions are once again coming under fire. Earlier this month, California State Assembly member Phil Ting proposed a plan to eliminate access to state financial aid or Cal grants for universities that give special consideration to legacy applicants. That would mean potentially reevaluating the merit of legacy preferential admissions. If the state stops giving USC access to that financial aid because it continues giving legacy and donor-affiliated applicants preferential status in admissions, the university stands to lose upwards of $26 million worth of aid for about 3,000 low-income students. According to USC's 2023 annual report on admissions practices, legacy applicants are labeled with a, quote, special interest tag, end quote. Joining us now to discuss her article is Daily Trojan's News Assignments editor, Eva Hartman.
Hi, Eva. Thank you for being here today.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
So can you tell us more about the special interest tags that an applicant at USC receives?
Yeah, so when any application is processed by the university, it's tagged under different, think of it as like labels or tabs. Basically, the university will assign categories to that application, the categories that the application falls under. You know, perhaps you played sports in high school, or you were the president of your student government. Those are different kinds of tags. A special interest tag is something that's applied in a variety of situations, but particularly to legacy and donor-related applications. A special interest tag in particular is what gets those applications a second look guaranteed by a senior admissions official.
What is the difference between these tags that applications receive when they are reviewed, and specifically what one for legacy admissions looks like compared to one for a different achievement?
The only difference here is that a special interest tag for a legacy or donor-related application guarantees that application a second look by a senior admissions official. All applications are tagged with a variety of different things to kind of categorize and organize those applications because tens of thousands come in every single year.
Okay. Can you talk about what you discovered while writing and reporting on this article about legacy admissions?
Yeah, so I came in really interested. We've obviously seen a ton of upheaval about this following the Supreme Court's overturning of affirmative action. And what I found with USC specifically is that there is some discrepancy and, you know, some gray area in our legacy preferential admissions. We definitely have legacy preferential admissions, but they're not as extreme as a lot of other universities. For example, Harvard and a lot of the Ivy Leagues that are really known for this have legacy admission rates in the 30 and 40%, while their regular student admission rates are, you know, 3 and 4%. At USC, I was unable to attain from the university what the specific legacy admission rates are. They do not collect or release that data. However, what I do have is that there's a slight discrepancy in legacy and donor-related high school unweighted GPAs and the rest of the applicant pool. So the GPAs of legacy and donor-related students who were accepted was a 3.83, while the rest of the applicant pool, if you are not a legacy or donor-related student, it was a 3.87. So there's a 0.04 difference, but when you think about high school GPAs and the college admissions process, that makes a big difference. What I found in my research as well is that there's a lot of evidence that these legacy and donor-related students are going to be predominantly white and predominantly very wealthy. And that's the kind of thing that can afford students things like SAT and ACT prep, really expensive and impressive extracurriculars, tutoring, college counseling, and very niche essay review. And lots of times those are things that push an applicant from, like, that's what gets you accepted. You meet that kind of threshold that the university wants for GPA, but those extras that you can achieve through, fortunately, a lot of time, money and status are what get you into the university. So whether or not we're just giving out extra spots to legacy students, I can't speculate on that, but I do know that there is some difference that could be explained by the probable wealth that those students have.
And based on your reporting, how do students feel about legacy admissions?
I talked to a lot of people for this, both, you know, legacy students and first generation students. The legacy students I talked to really did not see a lot of merit in having legacy preferential admissions. I talked to someone who has, I think it was 6 or 7 family members who are either alumni or current students, and she was quite clear. She didn't think that legacy preferential admissions were beneficial, and that a Trojan family is not defined by who in your family went to the university. Rather, it's the culture that we create at the university that brings the families of students in, and that's what a lot of the first generation students that I talked to experienced. They had really involved Trojan families because they chose to be. And like, for example, another first generation student was saying, yeah, like everybody obviously should have the exact same fair chance to get into this university. But I think she had a great quote where she was saying something like, just because your son goofed around in high school doesn't mean he gets a free pass in. He's got to work just as hard as anybody else. The university and, you know, the American higher education system as a whole is really at quite a crossroads right now. Obviously, USC survived through Varsity Blues, and now we have overturning of affirmative action, and we as a university and as a higher education system, really, this is a moment to really reflect on the situation that we're in, no longer being able to consider race and admissions and what that could mean for applicants. And I think a lot of students just hope that USC chooses a positive direction.
This episode was hosted by Benjamin Gamson, written by Benjamin Gamson, McCarthy Mahoney, and Julianne Cox, edited by Benjamin Papp and Thomas Johnson, produced by Jonathan Park, Grace Ingram, Benjamin Papp, and Thomas Johnson. Based on articles by Michelle Rivas, Eva Hartman, Christina Shikarbo, and Tomoki Chien. General Education is one of 4 shows on the Daily Trojan Podcast Network. You can find more episodes anywhere you listen to podcasts, as well as our website, dailytrojan.com. Visit the episode description for our links and more information.